This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
This is a public service announcement.
Hello and welcome to the JHR Rights Report, broadcast on CKUT 90.3 FM and podcast online at rabble.ca. I'm Adam Bemmel with Journalists for Human Rights. This week's edition of the Rights Report looks at countries using censorship to silence the media. I speak with Reporters Without Borders about Censorship Paradise, a campaign targeting vacation spots where freedom of speech and the press isn't respected. Now it's time for the Social Media Minute. Joining me here on the Rights Report is Damiano R. Now, Damiano, let's talk about Cuba. There's a blogger named Yoani Sanchez who's been repeatedly censored by Cuban authorities. What do you know about her case?
Yeah, well, Adam, Cuba has always been a huge tourist destination for Canadians. And a lot of our economy, a lot of our tourist economies goes into Cuba. So it's really important to understand what the government works like when it comes to censorship. And yeah, just going back to Yoani Sanchez, she's a remarkable blogger. She opened a blog called Generation Y. And ever since she opened it, she has been under a lot of heat from her government. But she has actually built up a loyalty in readership of over 1 million people.
Right. And what I've heard from her case is that she doesn't get frequent access to the internet in Cuba because that's only given to, you know, the tourists, people, the Canadians that are there or traveling there. Now, how is she able to publish her blog posts?
Yeah, that's it. Cuba is actually one of the countries where it's the hardest to get internet access. Only about 10% of the population has access to the internet over there. So she often poses as a tourist and goes into hotel rooms and just uses the internet that way. But she wrote on her blog that she can only use it for about an hour to an hour and a half per week. Mm-hmm. So what she does is she prepares her articles and she sends them to friends that are overseas and they publish it for her.
Right, and she's also been instrumental in starting another website, Desde Cuba, which was, you know, kind of an outlet for many writers and journalists in that country to speak out against the Castro regime. Now, for those who want to know more about Yoani and her work, Yoani Sanchez, what do you know about her? What kind of awards has she won?
Well, in 2008, she was named Times Magazine's one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people for her, and I quote, feisty dedication to the truth. And pointing out that, quote again, under the nose of a regime that has never tolerated dissent, Sanchez has practiced what paper-bound journalists were not able to, freedom of speech.
Mm-hmm. Now, people within Cuba aren't even able to access her website. From what I've read, since 2008, they've actually censored her blog, Generation Y, so people on the island of Cuba can no longer read her posts. But luckily for people around the world, we're able to read what she writes and get a glimpse of what life is like for writers, bloggers, activists in Cuba.
That's it. And I find that she's doing something that is actually very remarkable by taking the heat because she has her name out there. She's not doing this anonymously. And what is great, what I thought I would mention is that she actually asked visas to get out of the country 6 times from the Cuban government, and it was always refused.
She was applying to go pick up the awards that she's won around the world.
Yeah, that's it. She wasn't even able to pick up her own award. She's not even able to read her own blog in her own country.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
No problem.
Activists are meeting in Madrid to protest outside the Cuban embassy about the human rights situation in Cuba. Despite the release of some prominent dissidents, the Cuban government is still intimidating and arresting activists on the island.
That was from Amnesty International's video about those arrested in Cuba's 2003 Black Spring crackdown on dissidents and journalists. And you also heard from Damiano R., the Rights Report social media consultant. Follow him on Twitter, at Damiano R., or for more rights tweets, at JHRConU. In international human rights headlines, a fourth social media activist in Mexico was found dead in the city of Nuevo Laredo. Rescatripas is the online name of a moderator for the website of Nuevo Laredo en Vivo, which reported on drug trafficking in the area. The decapitated body of this internet activist had a message attached which read, "This happened to me for not understanding that I shouldn't report things on social networks." The Rights Report has been following the tragic events in Mexico, starting in September with the murder of two social media activists, leading up to last month's murder of journalist and blogger Elizabeth Macias. In both cases, bodies had letters attached signed with a Z representing the Zetas drug cartel operating in Mexico. RSF, Reporters Without Borders, is calling on the Mexican government to investigate these murders, demanding justice for all social media activists reporting on drug cartels. In Southeast Asia, two Vietnamese citizen journalists were sentenced to prison for broadcasting a radio program into China. The two men belonging to the Falun Gong spiritual movement, which is banned in China, were arrested earlier this year for operating unauthorized shortwave radio. They were convicted and sentenced for broadcasting a program called the Sound of Hope Network into China from their farm east of Hanoi, Vietnam. According to an RSF report, the Chinese government has also put diplomatic pressure on Indonesia, where another Falun Gong member was imprisoned and forced to shut down a radio station. RSF, as well as six other NGOs, wrote a letter to the Vietnamese president calling for the immediate release of these two men, as well as other journalists and bloggers imprisoned by the government. For Human Rights at Home and Abroad, I speak with Benoit Hervieux from RSF about how social media is being used to fight censorship.
In many countries, it's worse for the Twitters, the tuiteros, like they say in Mexico, or the Facebook users, or, the independent journalists, trying to produce, videos for YouTube, or, well, because it's the new way to make information. And without them, we, Reporters Without Borders, we wouldn't have any information about what is happening in Syria, what was happening before in Libya, also in Egypt during the revolution, also in Tunisia. There is a strong role, from the new journalists and a new generation of people producing information. And of course, I think that our new task in Reporters Without Borders is to defend in priority these people too.
That was Benoit Hervieux from the RSF Americas desk in Paris, France. I'm Adam Bemma, and you're listening to the JHR Rights Report, broadcast on CKUT 90.3 FM and podcast online at rabble.ca. In rights-related events, on November 22nd, Speak for Rights, an engaging speaker series in Montreal hosted by JHR Concordia, will feature human rights lawyer Pearl Eliadis.
The journalists and the media, for obvious reasons, tend to think that freedom of expression is the most important thing in the world. We tend to be the defenders of our own professional interests, which is normal. The journalists need to understand that there are a number of equally important rights that often come into conflict when you're looking at how human rights questions need to be addressed. And I'll give you an example of how it can go the other way. In Rwanda, the radio station that was broadcasting starting in 1993, 1994, just before the genocide, was responsible for a lot of what happened. And one of the reasons why the Americans, who were the only ones who had the technology at the time to potentially jam the radio station, didn't want to do that was because of freedom of speech. Free speech exponents will tell you that the criterion of imminent harm or danger would have been met under that category. And I think everyone's agreed at that point that it should have been jammed. But the more interesting question is what should have been done about the media the year before, when Tutsi were routinely being caricatured as being subhuman or inherently violent or inherently dangerous. And so these are really hard questions, and politicians are just as responsible as journalists are. And journalists need to understand the range of human rights that are at play, and not only the one that serves their own interests.
That was Montreal human rights lawyer Pearl Eliadis. Now we go to JHR Asia correspondent Justine Yu in the Philippines, where this November 23rd, the International Day to End Impunity, marks a solemn occasion in that country.
On this day back in 2009, 32 journalists were killed in Ampatuan town, Maguindanao province, here in the Philippines. The Day to End Impunity is a call to demand justice for the many journalists around the world who have been killed for exercising their right to freedom of expression and whose perpetrators are exempted from punishment or penalty. In the Philippines in particular, the situation is unfortunately dire and honestly laughably ironic. It's a country that boasts of having the freest press in the Southeast Asian region, and yet it's also been ranked the second most dangerous country to work in for journalists.
That was JHR Asia correspondent Justine Yu reporting from the Philippines. And that's this edition of the JHR Rights Report. I'm Adam Bemmer with Journalists for Human Rights. Tune in next week when the Rights Report speaks to the Professional Federation of Journalists in Quebec about a government proposal to label journalists. I leave you now with a song from Porno Pirate Ricardo, a Cuban punk rock group censored by the authorities on the island. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. time.